listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Find us online at cjsf.ca, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and SoundCloud.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. This episode is produced in partnership with West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
This is the Best of the West, inspiring women with real stories, hosted by West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
Hello, and welcome to Best of the West. I'm your host, Danielle, and today we're talking to Sibelle Negris, who is the CEO and co-founder of Webnames.ca, Canada's original .ca registrar. She is appointed to the BC Premier's Technology Council, is Vice Chair of the Small Business Roundtable of BC, and sits on the committees of various technology organizations. She's also a four-time winner and Hall of Fame inductee of Canada's top 100 most powerful women. In addition to her tech career, she's a columnist for Business in Vancouver and a speaker at over two dozen events each year, including TEDx. Wow. Welcome, Sibelle.
Thank you so much for having me, Danielle.
Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about what occupies your days?
Well, as the CEO of Webnames.ca, I am no longer really involved in the day-to-day operations of the organization. The team here are absolutely amazing, so they take care of all of that. I'm more involved in the strategic direction of the of where we're going, and then that gives me the opportunity as well to do a lot of different things on top of that. So I serve on a multitude of different boards. I'm a mentor as well through the Women's Executive Network. So those are some of the things that occupy my time from day to day.
That's awesome. So you're totally not a busy person at all.
Oh, no. Well, I'm a mom as well of two school-age children.
Yeah.
I also have two adult children, stepchildren, and I'm also a grandma. So all of that keeps me pretty busy.
That sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you end up co-founding Webnames.ca?
Well, it was kind of a long path towards that. Webnames is actually my third company. I started in more of the public sector after I graduated from university, and I was working in administration at UBC. So following a short career there, I decided that I was going to go back to school and study for my GMAT and LSAT. At the time, I was going to do a joint degree program, the MBA and LLB. And while I was doing that, I was hired by a pharmaceuticals company. So it started in pharmaceuticals. I went through an IPO with that company, stayed there for about 3 years, took an exit. And then I started a consulting company. I also co-own a construction company. And then after all of that, I ended up meeting my business partner, John Demko, at UBC again. So things led me, the path led back to UBC. He had been running the .ca registry for 13 years for free as a public service.
And wow.
His story was just so inspiring to me that this fellow in the computer science department was running the .ca registry and was registering at that point about 5,000 domain requests per month. So the university brought us together as well as the technology transfer manager, and we ended up working towards transitioning the registry to a new organization called the Canadian Internet Registration Authority. That was 18 years ago, going on 18 years, and they still, CIRA still runs the .ca registry today. We became one of the accredited registrar, and we grew from 3 to 30 people in 4 months, and Wow. Did $2.5 million in their first year of operation. It was kind of a crazy story, but a lot of fun as well.
Nice. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What has been one of the most memorable moments from your career or your education even?
Well, I would say that there have been many memorable moments, both good and bad. Mm-hmm. And one obviously was meeting John and learning about .ca and all the work that he had done. It was really quite interesting when I first met him, actually. I went to his office and all of the rules and regulations and everything was in his head. And he had all of this paperwork that people would have to fax to him. And it was all stacked up behind his door.
Oh my gosh.
That was really memorable to me because I could physically see all of this paperwork and realize how much work this man had done over all of these years.
Yeah.
And it was just so inspiring because he's that kind of guy that never did it for money. He's still like that. And he's still my business partner.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's such a powerful relationship to build and find a really good fit for 18 years.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. Yeah. What do you guys do to make sure that you work well together?
Well, John's not really involved in the day-to-day operations. So, he's amazingly trusting, and he's that kind of guy that you can literally play dice with over the phone. He's just so honest, and really, he got into this to preserve an online identity for all Canadians. Mm-hmm. And that was his goal, and he's done that. There are over 2.5 million .ca domain names registered now in Canada, and he's been recognized as a pioneer of the Canadian internet. He's won multiple awards, and I think that level of respect that we have for each other, that just makes for a great working relationship.
That's fabulous. So I have to confess to our podcast listeners that I've heard Sibel speak publicly before. And it was actually on the topic of imposter syndrome, which people have heard us talk about on the podcast before with a few of our other guests.
Yes.
You want to tell me a bit about your dirty little secret?
Yes. Well, it's funny because it all started when I wrote an article for Business in Vancouver about the imposter syndrome and letting people know about my dirty little secret that I'm the CEO and co-founder of a technology company, but I don't have a technology background. So that was my secret, and that the fact I don't feel like I belong a lot of times. And I think as my journey going through that article and then subsequent speaking engagements came about, what I've realized is that I'm not the only person that feels that way. And a lot of successful women, especially, but men as well, feel that they don't belong at the table.
Yeah.
That sometimes the more success that you earn, that that next level of success seems harder to reach, and that you're somehow fooling everyone.
Yes.
How did I get here? And one of the stories that I told, and you had mentioned that I was inducted into the Hall of Fame for the top 100 most powerful women in Canada. I was at that award ceremony, and it was the fourth time you get inducted into the Hall of Fame once you've won the award a few times. I was at the award ceremony in Toronto, and as I was waiting to go up on stage to be recognized, I looked around the room and I thought, gosh, what am I doing here? Somebody's going to realize that, it must have been a mistake. And even though this had not been the first time,
right,
I still felt that. And after talking to other women who had won the same award, we all felt the same way. And I realized that it wasn't just me feeling that way, that mm-hmm. so many of us do. And it was time to speak out about it. It was time to recognize that this is not an affliction that we should perpetuate, that it's something that we need to talk about, that we need to share those feelings, and partly to overcome them, but partly to recognize that it's out there, but we should, even though we feel that way, we can still get things accomplished. And sometimes it spurs you on a little bit to prove that you do belong.
Yeah,
and having that kind of fire burning under you to feel that is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. I mean, even when we were emailing to record the podcast, you're like, I don't have a STEM degree.
But right. I'm like, are you sure?
It's like maybe 15 years in the industry and being a CEO qualifies you. Like, absolutely.
Yes,
yeah. We don't
yes.
check people's STEM credentials on the podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, because we try to show that there are many pathways and career options into and out of STEM. I mean, there's people who take their STEM degrees and become science communicators and things like that. You know,
right.
there's lots of people who find a niche elsewhere other than what they studied exactly.
Yeah, and I think part of our success here is that I've just recognized that there are certain things that I don't know. And having the ego of I know everything or I have to know everything sometimes actually holds your company back. So, I'm kind of the opposite. I recognize that having a strong team is really important, and I defer to the team members who I hire to be experts in their fields. And you tell me.
Yeah,
I'm not the expert here, so let's, we can figure it out as a team, but I defer to their expertise.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to shine a light on one of those less than great moments that you referenced before?
Well, one that I learned a lot from, and I've told this story before, and it was my TEDx talk, actually, and it was one of those things. I've always had an issue, especially in my younger years, about public speaking. So, in fact, I tell the story quite often that when I was in university, I had started out in commerce, and I dropped out of commerce because I didn't want to speak publicly, and realizing that I had to speak in front of groups of up to 300 people sometimes within the classroom, I thought there is not a chance I'm going to be able to do this. So after I had graduated with a psychology degree, I decided that I had to overcome this issue of fear of public speaking. I went to Dale Carnegie, and they have programs to try to help you get over that fear of public speaking, amongst other things that they teach you. And it helped a little bit, but it wasn't until many years later when I started to get a lot of speaking requests that I thought, okay, I'm going to have to get over this fear. But little by little, even though I had that fear, I did it anyways. And after a few years of doing lots of speaking, it started to get a little bit better. Then, about 5 years ago, I was asked to speak at TEDx. And that was a whole new level of fear at that point. And, of course, the imposter syndrome, all of that kicks in. And I thought, gosh, but I'll do it anyway.
Right.
So during that time, I was going through a divorce. It was a really tough time in my life. My father was in hospice. He had been battling cancer for many years. So it was a really tough time in my life. So I was at that point a single mom, trying to deal with all these issues and still running the business. And I was still on boards and doing a lot of different things in charity and so forth. So I had a really terrible week. I won't go into all of the details, but it was one of those weeks where I was literally sleeping maybe 2 hours a night.
Oh, man.
So by Friday night, it was the dress rehearsal, and I went to the dress rehearsal and completely rocked it. I thought, okay, I've got this. This mm-hmm. is good. Saturday was the talk, and then Sunday I had booked another speaking engagement at an organization called the Mom Inc. Movement for 500 moms. So by that point, I hadn't done my notes yet for my Sunday talk. So I woke up Saturday morning really early after maybe sleeping 2 hours, and I started working on my Sunday talk. And by the time I got up on stage for TEDx, I think within 5 minutes of my talk, I started to feel kind of woozy. And then all of a sudden, that rush of maybe a mix of adrenaline and mm-hmm. all that, just it didn't agree with me. This room started to spin, and I thought, I'm going to pass out. So I was so close to passing out or walking off the stage, so I decided to walk off the stage. Everybody thought it was part of the act, except for my friends who knew what is going on. They were running backstage. I had friends who were watching the live stream. They were driving over to the event to see what had happened to me, and I was backstage with my head between my knees.
Right.
So I kept telling them, just send out the next speaker. After about four speakers had gone out, there were no other speakers to send out. And I realized at that point I had a decision to make. I either say I'm not going to do this or I go out there and finish it. And I decided if I don't do this, I'm going to kick myself for the rest of my life. So I got up and I told everybody, I'm going back out. So I got up and I walked out there and I stood in front of the crowd and I was just going to start with my talk again. And then I realized that this is an opportunity to explain myself and to learn from this experience. So I just started to talk and told everybody, look, I won't go into the details, but I had a horrible week. I hardly slept. I hardly ate. And I didn't take care of myself. And I let my life go out of balance. I finished my talk. And after that was all said and done, we were all standing up to be recognized, and then the crowd could come and talk to each of us. And I thought I had completely blown it. And I had the longest lineup, and there were people coming up to me, and women and men, but the women came up. One told me that I was her hero. Another one gave me a hug. She had tears in her eyes, and she said, thank you so much for being human. And I gave her a hug back. I started crying. And then while that was going on, a guy walks by and he punches me in the shoulder and he says, you've got balls. So that was one of those terrible moments that I thought I had completely blown something.
Right.
The worst case scenario of what I had feared all my life about public speaking actually happened to me. And then it turned out okay.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, what an experience. But it sounds like you made the most of it. And I think there's a lot to be said for getting permission to be human. I think that's something that especially women in high-powered positions and especially women in the tech industry where we're suspect whether we belong, it's always nice to get that permission to show your vulnerable side to actually be human.
And that's what I realized is that, showing your vulnerability doesn't show weakness. You can be strong and vulnerable at the same time.
Agreed. So given that story, how do you work to keep your life in balance?
Work-life balance is always a work in progress. And when I was younger, I was very much of the mindset that I had to work hard, not sleep. I wore it as a badge of honor that I could sleep 2 to 4 hours a night. And I did that for years and years and years. And when people would ask me, how do you get all this accomplished? I said, oh, I just don't sleep. And it was
okay. Sure a lot of people thought you were joking.
But I was literally sleeping for many years, probably an average between 2 and 4 hours. And what I've realized over the years is now that I'm older, you can't keep up that pace forever. So nowadays, I do have children, and time with the children is so precious because they grow so fast and I don't want to miss out on that. Mm-hmm. So when I'm with them, it's their time. I'm not checking the phones or checking emails their time is their time and I'm completely focused on them. I also started to take care of myself and realizing that exercise is important. And even though I can't do the level of exercise that I used to be able to do, I do go for long walks around the seawall and I'm eating healthy. So that consciousness of self-care is something that I never thought about when I was younger. I just thought, I'm tough, I can take this, I'm just going to work as hard as I can, get as much done as possible, and that's completely changed now.
It's probably for the best.
Yes.
Yeah, do you find it sometimes a bit more difficult to relate to the more male-dominated CEO tech groups, or yeah, what's it like generally being a woman CEO of a tech company in Vancouver?
Yeah, I think with men, in my ASTEC group, it's all men. And because I've been in the industry for so long, for over 17 years now, that I've become used to it. So all the years of going to technology events and being one of few or sometimes the only women in the room, at the beginning, I think I felt that to be isolating and challenging. And then over time, I just got used to it. And partly, I think, because growing up, I was quite a tomboy and I played street hockey with the boys down the street. And I always did things with men. And I had a construction company as well. So that was even more male dominated. So it was one of those things that I would say to other women in the field that, you know, maybe we shouldn't look at it as a disadvantage because female in technology, we're still kind of a unique thing. The media wants to talk to you. Opportunities come because you're female in technology. Why don't we flip that around and look at it as an advantage instead of a disadvantage? So I've really tried to live that. There have been obviously times when something happens at an event or something where both men and women automatically assume you know, situations where they go, oh, are you in marketing? Are you in HR? And no, I'm the CEO of the company. And those times make me realize that times haven't changed as fast as I would like. Or when I used to go to an event with a business partner, male business partner, they would automatically assume that I was the spouse or the executive assistant of my male business partner. So those are situations that I think will slowly change, but maybe too slowly for my liking.
Definitely is an issue. So, Sibel, where do you see your career going in 5 to 10 years?
Well, I will definitely continue to build Web Names into a dominant force in Canada. That, as well as looking at other opportunities that come up, I will continue to serve on a variety of different boards. I've been doing quite a bit of that over the years anyway, but I'm having a lot of fun serving on different types of boards, and we'll probably look towards serving more on corporate boards over time, and then potentially investing more in other companies, and particularly female-led companies as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, we often talk to people on the podcast who are volunteering with organizations or on boards because it affords new experiences. What kind of stuff have you been able to learn or contribute in your work with boards?
I think board work is it's so interesting to learn the board governance part of the different types of boards that are out there. On the board of Small Business BC, for instance, I was on that board for a number of years, and they have a policy governance model. The other types of boards sometimes are more operational. So just learning the different types of board governance has been interesting. There are pros and cons to the different types. I think that's also helped me in terms of the governance of my own company as well. So that's always been valuable to learn how other people do things, how they have the financial controls, risk management, all of that's really important. So you know, with every board that I've served on, I've learned something new and have felt very fulfilled in being able to give back and to help those respective organizations.
Nice, that's amazing. So do you want to share with us whether you had someone in your life who helped inspire you to get to where you are today?
I would say that would be my father. He was an entrepreneur, and way back, he was the president of Alcoa Asia when we lived in Hong Kong. And he had a phenomenal business career, very well connected, And when we moved to Canada, we kind of had to start again. And he worked for different types of companies, always had his eye on different opportunities, had multiple deals on the go at the same time. He worked in a variety of different industries, in engineering, import and export, hardwoods and softwoods, fisheries. So he has just such a variety of what he did. He was the kind of guy that had all sorts of ideas, super creative, and just so inspiring. So I think I've just watched him growing up with all these different deals and the excitement of everything that he was doing. Mm-hmm. So I think that was very inspirational to me as I started to craft what my career was going to look like.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, we often hear parents as as good cheerleaders for a lot of people that we bring on the podcast. Occasionally they're not the cheerleaders, but often our parents do help us decide what we're going to do with our lives, which
right.
is great. So shifting gears a little bit, do you want to tell me a bit about what your university experience was like and how it kind of helped mold where you got today?
Sure. Well, I mentioned earlier that I started out in commerce. So my first year was kind of general arts and more an economics program getting into commerce. And then I dropped commerce because of my fear of public speaking. So I went through a year or so of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So I took a lot of different types of courses. I took oceanography. I took geophysics and astronomy. I took some religious studies courses, statistics. So I didn't know what I wanted to do and eventually just ended up taking some psychology courses and enjoying it. And then I had a professor who was quite encouraging of me continuing my studies in psychology. And it was interesting because this professor actually accused me of cheating in an exam and because I ended up getting 100% on it.
Wow.
And he called me up after one of the after that particular exam, and he said, "Look, you know, want to know how this happened? We geared these exams so that you don't get 100%." So he was somewhat accusatory, but you know, opened up the question to how did this happen? And I said, "Well, I have a photographic memory," and he said, "What?" So I proved to him that I knew all the information, including some of those obscure references that were being asked in some of the exam questions. And he goes, "Oh, okay." And he ended up hiring me as his research assistant
wow.
for the next 2 years. So that's what I ended up getting my degree in. It was an interesting field of study. I enjoyed it at the time, and until I realized I was working with a PhD student at the time on a project, and it was basically interviewing parents of kids who had died from sudden infant death syndrome. And back then, the interview process was in person, but it wasn't automated, right? So you had to ask the questions looking at the subject, but be very non-emotional while you were asking these questions. And it was very challenging. And I realized at the end of that project that I was like emotionally just completely taxed. And it's something that I didn't really want to do for the rest of my life. And so I took a bit of time off and then ended up just working at UBC in administration and realizing that business was where I wanted to be and not working in public sector. So it was an interesting time because I was still of that mindset that I had to work harder than everybody else in order to get ahead. And so when I was working in the president's office, I would literally stay there until midnight every night, just to get all the work done and coming up with new ideas to try to make things more efficient. And I used to scare the security people who were coming in and say, what are you doing here? Go home.